dancing in the apocalypse.
I gotta get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and sparkle, Neely, sparkle.
I know what some of your big city no bra wearing hairy legged women livers might say.
How's it going, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Maximum Film, episode 199, and it's your boy, it's your host, Iffy Wadi Way, and in the booth with me are my friends, so let me introduce you to them. First up, we have the Christmas Zaddy himself, the only critic whose criticisms I want to hear ever. It's Alonzo Duralde. What's good?
Oh, Iffy, I'm so glad you brought up Christmas, because today, the day this episode drops, June 25th, is Leon Day. What is Leon Day, you ask? It is the exact midway point of the year between Christmases. We are exactly 6 months from Christmas today. Is it a pointless thing that somebody on the internet made up? Probably.
Is it because it's Noel backwards?
It is Noel backwards.
Oh, nice. Very good. Wow. I'm going to bring you to an escape room with me, Drea.
Oh, I would hope so. Yeah.
So there are cool things that you can do to mark the occasion. Obviously, it's a good day for Christmas movies and music, but it's also, if you're a crafter, you know, I know, Drea, you're thinking about crocheting a tree skirt this year. You know, like, now's a good time to maybe start like lining up your materials and planning that stuff out.
Hey, maybe, I love a crafternoon.
Of course. Yeah. Maybe start thinking about like your gifts this year and what your budget's going to be and, you know, start putting some planning into that. If you have a charity that you support every Christmas and only at Christmas, they would love to hear from you in June. So maybe throw something their way if you have the means to do so. And I'm going to now shamelessly plug my upcoming collaboration with the Deck the Hallmark guys. I'll Be Home for Christmas Movies. And they are doing a special event where if you pre-order the book online at any of the wonderful websites have it for pre-order, and you send a receipt to hello@deckthehallmark.com, this Sunday night they'll be doing a live stream on Facebook where they will eat one sugar cookie for every book pre-ordered.
Oh, no.
Oh, so snap.
Let's get them sick. That's all I'm asking.
Yeah.
I can't make that offer because for people for doing it, I will eat too many sugar cookies.
Yeah.
No, like I would do that just for if like you guys just, hey, why don't you guys just keep telling me things? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm gonna eat a sugar cookie for every text you send me. Yeah.
You know, anytime it's a, I'm doing this, if you do this, the internet loves to make you do that thing.
Uh-huh.
As much as they true.
Can. Oh, but what's also true is how much I love you. We have the queen of the Midwest herself. It is Drea Clark. What is good?
Thank you, my beloved. As people may or may not know, Iffy in an alternate universe is the Nigerian man I have tracked down, yes. For a green card marriage, that I insist on having him call me his Nigerian queen.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have a whole
and
thing.
I have to have you saved as my phone background.
Yes.
Even though I've told you.
Yes.
Even though I've
told
you.
I don't care who pulls you over. You need my photo in your phone. We have fun. We have fun with 90 Day Fiancé.
The rich world of this show that I will never watch. Oh. Yeah. I love watching y'all watch it though.
Yeah. Oh. No, it's probably here's better the thing. This way.
Look, you'll get sucked in the same way I finally got sucked into The Circle. And I gotta say. I am like halfway through and I'm all
smiley emoticon, fire emoticon, applause emoticon, end of message.
I love hearing them say emojis out loud. Yes.
Oh yeah.
Well, something else I love that, see you guys, I tried a segue. Something else I love is just today in the last few hours, a very fiery news story of Ms. Britney Spears speaking her truth about her conservatorship.
Yes.
And I don't think her situation is good. What is good for me is her being able to vocalize the pain and frustration she feels about her situation. But on top of that, in finding this, I was looking through Twitter and, you know, she had this whole thing talking to a judge, and what truly warmed my heart in the dorkiest old woman way, because I don't always understand these things are happening, is starting last night, you know, knowing that she was going to speak, all of these fandoms of other pop stars, like the Katy Perry fans, the Taylor Swift fans, the Mariah Carey fans, they were all tweeting like, come on, Swifties, or come on, Lambs, or come on, Katy Cats. They all have names. I'm old. I don't know these things. And they were like, tomorrow, Britney Spears is speaking. Let's get this trending and show her our support. And it is fine for me to admit that I have PMS and my tendency to cry is enhanced that much more. I was so genuinely verklempt looking at all these fandoms, which fair enough are like probably, you know, middle-aged men somewhere, but there was so much heart to them and to thinking that them getting something trending would do anything. Anyway, I don't care. It seems so
it's like warm-hearted. You don't fuck with the K-pop people and you do not fuck with the diva worshippers. So,
no,
you
know, yeah,
they will make things happen on social media. Yeah.
Iffy, what's good with you?
Oh, what's good with me is, you know, my buddy kickstarted the figures. I've shown many of these figures, you know, like the Extreme Hat on the Hat, which is the Henry and Glenn Forever and Ever, Astro Boy Tetris in 28, done as Colossus. It's my buddy Rocom, and he recently did some new toys, but one of the toy characters, Johnny Tombstone, he did based off of me and wanted me to model it, so I did like a promo for it, and I finally have it in my hand, and he's way more brolic than me, so like,
it's so cool. Like, yeah. He is holding up, it's an iffy action figure, but like with is that a like a robotic arm?
Yeah, or
a
there's bionic... a robotic arm. Okay. And so that's kind of like the main thing about these figures. Normally he does like soft vinyl toys that are pretty big like this.
Oh yeah.
But with this is called the Glyco system. This is once again, like I said, with nerddoms, you find a whole niche you never knew existed that has been thriving. In toy collectors, there's a system called Glycos where you can replace the arms, the legs, and the heads. And so people buy all these different artists who create toys using the system so they can mix and match the different parts.
Can he make a version where you can crush walnuts between the thighs?
Oh man, I'm gonna text him right after the pod and get him on that. So yeah, big shout out to my man Rocom. He also had an album come out, so go see him. It's all the good stuff. But speaking of good stuff, we got some show to get to because we're gonna be discussing the listener selected film, 2004's Mind Game. Of course, we'll have an answer for a question from our hotline. And as always, we'll have staff picks. But first, it's time for our new segment, It a Dick, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Each of us will read a new segment and answer the question, Is This Important? Do I Care? And first up, we're talking about Julie Delpy, who is annoyed with the horrible film industry. In a recent interview with the French publication Telerama, actor, writer, director Julie Delpy spoke about her latest film, My Zoe, and her frustrations with the film industries. This is a quote. I have a wonderful screenplay, a dazzling display of splendor about the pioneers of Hollywood. One of the best I've written. A talented and well-known English actress, Emilia Clarke, of Game of Thrones fame, is attached to the project. And yet, I'm still struggling. Nonstop. I have so many movies in my drawers that will never be shot. If you only knew, I'm fed up. She also talked about how she's so exhausted by the film industry that she turned down a fourth Before film and even considered quitting altogether to become a doctor. Another quote, a year and a half ago, I was not far from it. The hell I went through to produce my film had exhausted me. I said no to Richard Linklater for the fourth part of the Before films. I thought that maybe I could go back to school. I would make a very good doctor, for example. You give me three symptoms, and I'll tell you what you're suffering from. But I like to create, to tell stories. It's stronger than me. Is this important? Do you care?
I love Julie Delpy so much. She is such a charm factory, and she's so talented in so many ways. And although I hate that this is what she's dealing with at the moment, wow, I wish more people knew how hard it is to get films made. That the idea of, you know, that small moment for the handful that make it to any kind of accolades level where they're accepting an award and they're like, why are there so many names? It's like most of those films have been worked on for 10 some years, just like pushing rocks up hills. And again, it is not like, oh, she's entitled to make it or any of that, but it is ridiculous that I'm sure, you know, she has a proven track record.
Yeah.
She is an attached star. I'm sure it's a strong project. And it is that just the sort of opening of the curtain of, yeah, Do you want to see how difficult it is? This is where I am right now.
Well, she's actually got a really, you know, impressive career as a filmmaker and has managed to get stuff done. And so it's not even just that, like, it is generically difficult to get a film made, but like, how many times does Julie Delpy have to struggle to make a movie when she's made like 4 or 5 features at this point, and they're, you know, well received, and I'm sure made money. And it's
that
like
do well it, that make money. It is that idea of,
you know,
if they're and I guarantee it works against her that not just she's a female director, she's a beautiful actress.
Yes,
and there is something so inherently, like, the times that I've worked with directors who came out of acting backgrounds that. Oh, I mean, like, there's a reason she also doesn't put herself in her own films. Weirdly, they would be even harder to get them made because it just seems like vanity projects for someone not good enough.
She's been in some of them.
Sure, sure. Like, she did the pairing the Chris with Adam. Yeah, yeah. No, she's been in some of them, but like with this one too, I just
it boggles the mind, I think, because you think, oh well, sure, it's hard to get, you know, getting started of course is difficult and staying in there, but you know, if you're a bankable name or you have a track record or this like, no, it's like it's as though she were having to make the first movie every time is what it sounds like. And yeah, she's a great actor, she's a great writer. I at the LA Film Critics Dinner, she ate Richard Linklater's dessert, what I was very impressed by, this is depressing to hear, and it is at the same time not all that surprising to hear.
That's what I was gonna say. There are so many things said that I just have so many thoughts on. I think kind of goes back to something that I think we often land on when we talk about a lot of women directors, right, where it's like it seems like the through line for a lot of white male directors is you have a hit, you're good. And for everyone else, it's 2 hits. And then if you're a women director, then it's multiple hits. You need to be so solid. And of course, you know, it's not as simple as just that. There's also politics that come into play. Who likes who? What studio likes messing with you? What studio all of a sudden thinks you're difficult because you said something mean about them on a thing? You know, but I think you're right. Right. Like with a resume like that, it is almost mind boggling. And it is like the thing where, like, normally when someone's like, I got a drawer full of scripts, I'm like, all right, whatever. But like, you know, when it's Julie Delpy saying, I was like, I want to see those. I want to read those.
Well, speaking of people getting Hollywood backing that you wouldn't have expected, Steven Spielberg, his production company Amblin, has signed the deal with Netflix. Now, you may recall a few years ago, Steven Spielberg very vocally questioned whether Netflix films should be allowed to be nominated for Oscars. He even went as far as to compare them to TV movies and asserted that Netflix films should only compete for Emmys. Well, according to Variety, Steven Spielberg's production company Amblin has now partnered with Netflix on a new deal that will feature several projects produced by Spielberg. This includes some features that could also be potentially directed by Spielberg. Is this important? Do you care?
I find this very important because I do think the allocation of money and power in this town is always going to be a thing. And he has both of those things. And Netflix has put a lot of bank into getting a credible roster working under them and has done a great job. What I really find interesting will be the rollout of what these Amblin projects are, how involved he is. And he also retains his his shingle at Universal for producing. So my guess is, like, the very Spielbergian big money, whatever things will largely be Universal projects that will have theatrical rollouts that will whatever. But there's also Netflix is talking about gaining an exhibition arm too. Like,
yeah,
I'm sure Steven will get his boot in wherever the boot getting's good.
Well, and I think also maybe the opposite is true, where he's got these pet projects that he wants to make that even Universal's like, I don't know, that seems a little pricey, it seems a little complicated, I don't know if we can do that. And then Netflix, as we've seen, is like, oh sure, we'll bankroll this, you want to make it, we're, you know, let's, you know, we're desperate to be taken seriously here, so yes, we will fund this thing that nobody else wants to make. I mean, The Irishman got made for Netflix. I know you don't like that movie, but anyway,
The Irishman got made for
Netflix because no other studio wanted to bankroll that movie.
I hope that Steven Spielberg does a movie where he ages up the entire cast of E.T.
That would be kind of a great pitch.
Yeah, Casey, take that out. I want that pitch for myself.
Like, you know, I was just thinking about, was it Guillermo del Toro that wanted to make that Lovecraft adaptation with Tom Cruise, but it was going to be like really expensive and it had to be rated R, and then everybody kind of got cold feet. Like, some streamer is going to step up for that, because that's the thing they do now. Like, we've got, you know, Drunken Sailor in Vegas money, and you know, we don't have the parameters that studios do about what we are and aren't going
to
support.
So famously close to so many ports for all those sailors. All right, so we actually have my favorite new article to talk about. It concerns Vin Diesel and Dwayne The Rock Johnson. So in a recent profile in Men's Health, Vin Diesel was asked about his ongoing feud with fellow Fast and Furious star Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Diesel had this to say, quote, "God, I really want to do a Vin Diesel, but I won't. It'll take too long. He's a mumbler.
My approach at the time.
It'll take too long. Okay. My approach at the time was a lot of tough love to assist in getting that performance where it needed to be. As a producer to say, okay, we're going to take Dwayne Johnson, who's associated with wrestling, and we're going to force the cinematic world, audience members, to regard his character as someone they don't know. Hobbs hits you like a ton of bricks. That's something I'm proud of, that aesthetic. That took a lot of work. We had to get there, and sometimes at the time, I could give a lot of tough love. Not Fellini-esque, but I would do anything I'd have to do in order to get performances in anything I'm producing. Is this important? Do you care? And third question, can we only talk about this forever?"
Yeah, this is extremely important, and I care as much as anyone can, because this is proof that this feud is still going on, because this distinctly ignores The Rock's resume up until Fast Five.
Literally one of the biggest motion picture stars in the world, to refer to him as, oh, everyone knows Dwayne from wrestling.
Yeah, like he showed up on the set of the first day in a singlet.
Oh my God. God,
there's just so, we're going into this next one. I mean, remember, Fast 9 is coming out. The Rock will not be in it. So they chose not to. For him to say this on this press tour, we got Tyrese leaking, Vin Diesel being messy, and leaking. Like, it's just, this is the messiest press tour we have ever had. And this is
Dame
why.
Helen Mirren just sips her tea. Yes.
I do love, too, that, like, it was so messy in the last movie. When they had scenes together, they refused to perform together. So all of the Hobbs and Dominic scenes are like, just like, oh, it's Dom in his car. And then cut to 4 days later. Oh, it's Hobbs walking towards the car in a reverse angle.
It's like Peter Sellers and Orson Welles in Casino Royale, who hated each other so much that they filmed their scenes entirely separately.
Yet somehow Peter Sellers made his... Orson Welles' performance so much better by doing that, Alonso. And they call that tough love.
Fellini-esque, I think.
Yeah, Fellini. It's not Fellini-esque, but kind of close. I actually think more of Vin Diesel's intelligence that he would come up with this angle of bullshit. It is impressive.
This is taking me back to acting class, because this is acting class level bullshit. You have the guy in there who like is trying to be an auteur, and it's like, no, you're just going to be a guy who takes your shirt off. You're not that guy.
I remember the first Sundance I attended was in like 1995, and Vin Diesel had a movie there, like one of those early Sundance that I went to that he starred in and directed in. And yeah, I think to this day, he's mad that he's not Ed Burns. Basically. Oh,
for sure. Was it the courtroom one?
No, that was Sidney Lumet. This was something
himself. That's right.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God. Yes.
But yeah,
anyway.
So
there was a moment where Vin Diesel was in Sidney Lumet films. Let's never forget that.
I mean, and here's the thing. is I love Vin. He's great. But if you're telling me to pick who's the better actor out of Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Vin Diesel, it's going to be Dwayne every time. Oh, Dwayne has range. Vin Diesel is good at what he does, but range is not the forte in Vin's tool.
And didn't Diesel, let's not forget, walk away from this franchise and then kind of come crawling back?
Oh, yep. Uh-huh. He came.
When the whatever the pitch black the Braddock no not Braddock
yeah
what
yeah
the
movie's called? Riddick
the Riddick movies didn't go anywhere close.
yeah
oh. Also, Dwayne The Rock Johnson came up with a pseudonym as a wrestler. Vin Diesel picked Vin Diesel as his acting name. So
yeah,
it was cool. I think he stole it from a porn star, but who will never know.
Well, that's the perfect
next note week, to end y'all. On. Episode 200, F9. Beer. Yes.
Oh yeah,
F9.
I'm about to see it in. I'm about to see it in IMAX. By the time you're listening to this, I'm getting ready to see it in IMAX. Dragging my girlfriend along. She has not seen the movies. I said, "Look, I got all 9 over there. I got all 8." We could get you caught up. She said, what are the cliff notes? I said, there are none. You got it.
There are no cliff notes. We don't need cliff notes. Yeah.
We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking about Mind Game.
Hi, my name is Graham Clark, and I'm one half of the podcast Stop Podcasting Yourself, a show that we've recorded for many, many years. And at the moment, instead of being in person, we're recording remotely, and you wouldn't even notice. You don't even notice the lag.
That's right, Graham. And the great thing about this... Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Okay. And,
okay, go ahead.
And you can listen to us every week on MaximumFun.org.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Your podcasts.
Okay, we're going to take a quick moment away to talk to you about our friends Storyblocks. Storyblocks is dedicated to being the world's best royalty-free stock media subscription service with an ever-growing library that has more than 1 million high-quality stock assets, including 4K HD footage, After Effects and Premiere Pro templates, music, images, sound effects, and more.
Yeah, they have affordable subscription plans and tools with Storyblocks Unlimited All Access Plan. You can get unlimited downloads of everything in their library. And even if your subscription ends, check this out. Everything you've downloaded is yours to keep. And as part of their ongoing restock initiative, Storyblocks has released a new round of collections, Queer Spaces and Faces, created by some really incredible LGBTQI+ creators that will feature the layered experiences of the LGBTQI+ community. That's tight.
You know, it's really hard to get noticed on the internet. You need to jazz things up, whether it's with sound, with image, anything possible that can, you know, get your message out there and let the world know what's going on. For example, if you are a Max Fun listener and you listen to shows that are not this one, you may have heard the new promo for our show. And if you have, then you've heard the really cool music that's in the background, and that came from Storyblocks. That's the sort of thing they can do to take your online video, to take your spot, your whatever it is that you're putting together, and really kind of, you know, kick it up to the next level. And like they said, once your subscription ends, you still get to hang on to everything that you've downloaded.
Yes, jazz it up! You can explore their library and subscribe today at storyblocks.com/maxfilm. That's storyblocks.com/MAXFILM.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Sophie Wadiway. In the studio with me are...
Drea Clark.
Alonzo Duralde.
And today, we're talking about Mind Game, a movie that was selected by one of our Max Fun members, Meryl. Thank you, Meryl, for supporting the show and for choosing this movie. You are great. A synopsis might be difficult to summarize, so here's the one from IMDb. The film follows Nishi, a loser who has a crush on his childhood girlfriend. After an encounter with the Japanese mafia, aka the Yakuza, the film follows Nishi as he journeys to heaven and back and ends up trapped in an even more unlikely place. Nishi and some friends attempt to break out of their trap and discover what it truly means to be alive along the way. This is a mind-bending trip that uses some of the most innovative animation ever created.
Might I just say how thankful I am? We never have the printed synopsis. And so people have heard us stumble through many a story.
Oh, yeah.
I took a photo that I told you guys about of myself during the first 20 minutes of this movie because I was trying to picture what I would say as the synopsis.
No, I got the script and my first thing was like, oh God, please don't make me have to do the brief synopsis.
Please. Oh, wow. And also, you know, so this, as Iffy mentioned, this was a film recommended by a listener, and they actually won we did something with the Max Fun Drive and they got to pick this as a result. So thank you, Meryl, for that. I was so confused. The first 5-10 minutes of this, I watched 3 or 4 times because I wasn't entirely sure that they were going to segue out of that into a more structured narrative. So I was like literally trying to teach my brain what the in the words of Vin Diesel, what the aesthetics of this movie were. Like what, because it's and I also think it's fair enough. This came out in 2004, and I don't think a ton of people are familiar with it. I feel very safe giving spoilers. Mm-hmm. And what this summary alludes to and what blew my mind. So tons of stuff happened, right? We have this guy, there's like back and forth in time. And it's not just the main character's timelines. It's other people's timelines. Ooh, flashback to childhood. Ooh, whatever. Different animation points layered onto each other, like different styles. And then midway through, not even all the way midway through, all of our protagonists are in fact, my friends, swallowed by a whale. And then it goes from this story that started as like these kind of younger people fleeing the mob after this murder and all of this. And there, of course, is obviously a little sidestep along the way when one of them dies, and then it weirdly mimics the movie Soul because they jump back into their body. I was like, wait, the second half of this movie is taking place inside a whale?
Oh, yeah.
Why did I ever think I've ever had a creative idea in my body? Because I have not.
When I was watching the second part, I was like, if I were to watch the first part, pause, walk away, someone finish it, and then tell me that this was happening, I'd be like, bro, you messed up. You started watching the wrong movie.
Oh, there's that's a different movie.
This can't possibly be the same film.
Because it's so, and as an anime fan, you know, I am open and used to wild ideas. But even me, who will watch a show where people's clothes rips off to get stronger, had to like try and figure out what was going on. Because there's also an element of like, okay, are elements of these are in characters' heads? Like, what is the ground? I'm trying to see if this is a grounded or this. And so after watching it, I went to and read the Wikipedia, and apparently, all that did happen.
Yeah. Like, right. Oh, yeah. Like, thank God for the Wikipedia page. Because I was like, really? That's who that is. Oh, that's what this other thing meant.
I waited till, again, like you guys, to the end to read that. But it was interesting. So, you know, the summary said, we're following primarily this guy named Nishi. He's met up with his childhood love. I detested that one of her biggest character attributes was had very large breasts, and even she has this like flowy dress where her boobs are always a lighter color than the dress. I'm like, okay, we get it. She's got big boobs. Like, but, and there is some poignancy to that when you, once you're in the whale and really getting to know her,
right.
But there's this really interesting thing at the beginning, like I said, of trying to learn the visual language of this, where it seems as if we're seeing him, like they're having this conversation. She's going to marry someone else. He wants to tell her not to. And it looks like one of those fake out where he like yells and professes his feelings for her, but then he doesn't really. But then later on, he does that to the Yakuza, but he actually does it. Like, it's this weird. I was like, wait, okay. Well, and was the other one a fake out?
They introduce the character as somebody who's a would-be like manga artist. So you think, oh, this is, we're seeing his imagination. This is what he wants to have happen or what he wishes he could do. Oh, no. This is actually going down. And it is going down after he returns from being dead and decides to, yeah, like you said, very soul-like, run in the opposite direction and somehow come back to Earth. And it's just like, this movie kind of made my head hurt. And I mean, I haven't seen nearly as much anime as Iffy has, but I mean, I've seen my share. Yeah. I've seen, you know, I've seen most of the Studio Ghibli movies. I've seen Akira. I've seen a lot of Satoshi Kon. Like, I'm not totally, you know, coming into this as a first timer. And I was like, what's happening here? Why does it keep changing style? Why are they in a whale? You know, just like, and at some point you just have to go, fuck it. I can't steer the river. I just have to
follow
it. You
need to dive into the whale yourself. And basically. I did end up succumbing. I will say again, when I made my face, it's also, there's a level of violence to the beginning. We certainly watch a lot of crime stuff. There's whatever. But there's both an attempted sexual assault. Yes. And then there's also our young man protagonist is murdered by being shot up the anus. Yes. And there's such a weird homophobic energy around like what that, like the attempt of emasculating him. I was very concerned that that was going to be what we were with the whole time. I was so pleased when instead I was like, oh, now we're unlocking all sorts of crazy stuff, like him in this afterlife, like them in the whale, like them exploring what literally the idea of not only is half of this movie in the whale, that half becomes about like personal self, like self-improvement, like people like
growth,
like growth and like find it, like the older sister who's been cowering the whole time, like cuts all her hair off and like all of these people, like, you know, once you're in the whale, you're gonna try and live your best life.
That's kind of what I liked about it, because I had the same kind of aversions with the whole Yakuza scene, because I was like, is this about to be, because I know that anime can just be dumb, especially a 2004 anime about those things, especially Japan's just bad handling of, you know, LGBTQ situations just in general in anime oftentimes, but it really almost, like, I think, like you said, with the whale, that contrast almost makes the whale stuff hit harder, because it feels like they come from this world, they're in this limbo in the whale, and then now they're getting, it's almost like the beginning starts with him getting a second chance at life, but it isn't until like they go in the well and out that they're getting a real second chance at life, where they're kind of re-changing the way they look at things.
I would love to talk, you know, we are people who enjoy getting into the nuts and bolts of things. There is something about this that gave me that appreciation that animation does in terms of the framing, the composition, the POV, the camera moving within spaces, the world building. Like, they build a whole afterlife. They build this entire world within the whale. They build the cityscape. They build the flashback. And so not just like, there's a lot of world building happening. There's so much inventive, cinematic looking visuals that they're playing with. And that's more than just, like we've mentioned, there's sort of one pervasive animation style that's primarily threaded through, but then every once in a while, it looks like sort of photo or photorealism is coming with some of the characters.
Rotoscoping or something.
Yeah, that there's, but on top of that, like the idea, even just the scene within the diner, it's opening, like I could tell you how much it would cost to shoot a scene like that. And it is not a cheap indie, because they're covering it from all sorts of sides. And then like, ooh, we're doing a close up on like the smallest screw in the chair so that a sweat bead can drop on it. Like, all of this stuff is really unlocking what animation can do that would be impossible in live action.
I think what's great about animation of wherever it comes from is at its best, you know, it can like completely duplicate the world as we know it. And then it can also throw out all the rules of the world as we know it, whether it's the physics of the world or the elasticity of the world or anything. I mean, you can literally do anything, and that's what's kind of exciting. And as opposed to movies that are sort of grounded in some sense of live action reality, but then like heap in a bunch of CG to sort of like convince us that this other thing is happening. Like, you can make all this stuff within animation like completely organic and you know, logical, you know, into whatever your the internal logic of this story is. And so, you know, yeah, they do kind of flip around on animation styles, but you always get the impression that it's for a reason, you know, whether to establish a new place, whether to sort of reflect state of mind. I mean, like, this movie made me nuts, but at the same time, like, I respect what it's doing. And I suspect that if I come back to it again, you know, after a while and revisit it periodically, it's always going to have new things I discover and new connections that I'm able to make with it. And yeah, it definitely doesn't do any of the stuff that you're kind of planning it to do. And weirdly, I think the beginning and ending montages, where so much stuff is flashing before you and jumping back and forth in time and jumping back and forth from character to character, it's almost like these kind of snatches of dream logic. Yeah. And so it reminds me of, like, there's this Thai filmmaker that I've talked about occasionally, Apichatpong Virasethakun, where like he has a movie called Cemetery of Splendor that is about soldiers that have a sleeping sickness. And you spend all this time in this ward where they're being treated, and there's like these lights that help them sleep. And if you doze off while you're watching the movie, it feels interactive. It feels like whatever snatch of dream bits you're seeing in your head before you jolt back awake and realize, oh shit, I'm in a movie and I shouldn't be asleep.
Like, and are they in the whale now?
Yeah, they play into the movie. And it's kind of the same thing with this one, where I think, like, if at some point you did kind of like nod off, it would just sort of be part of the experience. And it's a movie that would that would encompass that, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you could very easily convince me I dreamt this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I could, if I came back in future weeks and referenced this and you guys all were like, oh, we're just going to tell Drea forever that was just her dream, I would be like, all right, that tracks. I'm not even worried about my like cognitive state, because it tracks. This is fully something I dreamt.
Oh yeah, no, this movie feels a lot like it's going to be like a mother for me, where like you watch it once and then you read up on it a little bit to make sure you're just not too dumb, and then you watch it again. You're like, all right, I'm gonna see
all
how
right,
I really
movie
feel. Yeah. Now that I know it's not me, it's you. Now I'm gonna watch and get another taste.
Okay, I talked a lot and we're about ready to vote, but Casey had one question on here I want to ask you guys. Which is, because I'm someone who pretty much does everything sober, so I'm a boring answer. Would you recommend watching this movie high or sober?
Ooh. Oh yeah, no, that's the, when I said I'm going to rewatch, that's what I meant. I'm gonna make a whole night out of it. I'm gonna get toked up and just and just really take it in.
I would say do not watch it high the first time.
Yeah, that actually, yeah, that's a very important
beyond
aspect.
That it's you're on your own, but that first viewing, I think you really need to have all your faculties about
our it. Recommendations are, if you're gonna do it, watch it, read the Wikipedia, and then watch it again high. Yeah.
There you go.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Vote. I'll stop stalling.
Yeah. Go for it.
I would say I would screen this. I think this would be a lot. I think, especially for a first viewing, I think it would really help to take it all in, having it bigger than your eyeballs and, you know, like in a dark room and really focusing on it. I mean, you can, if you, as close as you can do that at home, you should, but yeah, if you could see this projected, run, don't walk.
Yeah.
Don't swim.
I will also be a screen it. This was unusually enjoyable for me, and it was definitely something I wished I had been sharing with someone. Like, it was a bummer for me that it was so late, because you all were about to get a bunch of texts from me that I was not able to wait to talk about. So,
Andre, have you, just out of curiosity, like, have you watched a lot of anime or much or any? Or
yeah, I've watched a fair amount. I watch, and maybe that's why I was thinking on the episodic, more of what I've seen has been in an episodic structure, but I've also seen, like you're saying, the broader, the Studio Ghibli, those things. So yes, I have a love of the fantastical. This was outside of what I have am more familiar with, though. So yeah.
Gotcha.
Iffy, what's your vote?
Oh, you know, I'm a screen it. And I think this needs to be a double feature with something like a rubber or something just a wacky evening.
Frankly, I'm shocked that Iffy isn't doing this entire episode wearing like a soccer jersey and a big pair of tidy whiteys.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's just squeezing a soccer ball.
Exactly.
Oh, man. What a wild character. All right. Well, we'll be right back after we hear from another show for Maximum Fun. So don't go anywhere. Bye-bye.
I'm Allie Gertz.
And I'm Julia Prescott.
And we're the hosts of Round Springfield.
Round Springfield is a Simpsons adjacent podcast where we talk to Simpsons folks about non-Simpsons things.
That's right. So in the past, we've gotten to talk to legendary showrunners and writers like Al Jean, Bill Oakley, Josh Weinstein, Dana Gould, Mike Reese, and David X. Cohen.
Voice actors like Maurice LaMarche, Maggie Roswell, and Yardley Smith, the voice of Lisa Simpson herself.
Hell yeah. So we've been away securing guests for our final five episodes. We won't tell you everybody, but we'll let you know that the last episode is kind of a big deal. We got Matt Groening.
Homer's dad.
We got Homer's dad.
Check out new episodes of Round Springfield starting June 21st.
On Maximum of Fun or wherever you get your podcasts.
Smell you later.
Welcome back to Maximum Film.
I'm your host, Iffy Wideaway. In the studio with me are
Alonzo Duralde,
Drea Clark.
And now we're going to have a question that was left on our hotline. This is an emailed question from Rebecca Thompson. Y'all been loving that email. It seems like y'all want y'all voice heard, but y'all voice will be heard no matter the way you tell us the thing you want to tell us. All right, let me get to reading this email. Hey gang, I'm writing you from Belfast, and this question has been on my mind for a while. Here in Northern Ireland, we have a very specific accent, and it's beautiful. But it's also been very badly imitated by many actors. Sean Bean in the Patriot Games, Brad Pitt in The Devil's Own, and Tommy Lee Jones in Blown Away come to mind. My question is, what is some of the worst accent work you've come across in films? Love the show, finally donated, and eagerly awaiting my pen. Well, looks like you caught that in physical media.
Nice, yes.
I'm gonna start this off with one that I just deeply in my soul felt, and that's gonna be Concussion. I was not a fan of that Nigerian accent. And it's so funny because it seems like something like that's the thing, especially across black comedians, like everyone has like their African accent, but you really can tell. And the first time I could tell is when Winston Duke was in Black Panther. I was like, oh, this sounds very Igbo. And then sure enough, in an interview, he said that was his like influence. So it's like, oh yeah, no, there is one. And people are just doing bad ones. It never sounds good. So yeah, no, I was not a fan.
Well, I think you've hit something there, which is there are probably actors who are going after some sort of African accent as opposed to trying to be specific about it. And like a thing that makes me crazy with Ewan McGregor is that he can do good accents. Like I think his Southern accent in I Love You, Philip Morris is great. But sometimes he just gets, I think, handed a role and he goes, oh, American. And it just becomes this like hodgepodge of flat vowels and like just it's not specific to anything. And I think specificity is always important. I mean, like, I can't tell you the number of times that okay, Julia Roberts in Charlie Wilson's War. She is from Georgia and she's playing a Texan and she's doing an accent that is neither. But I think a lot of times when people get handed like the assignment of Southern, it's like, well, they don't ask Well, are we talking Mississippi Southern? Are we talking Georgia, you know, Kentucky, Texas?
Colonel these are Sanders? All, yeah, what are these we, are, what are
these
we talking?
Are distinct ways of speaking, you know. And so, yeah, I think when people kind of just lump it all into one big thing, whether it's, you know, Southern or American or whatever, that's where the trouble starts.
Alonzo, I'm proud and shocked that you didn't bring up Charlie Hunnam in Pacific Rim, because certainly when we talked
too
about
soon.
It.
Too soon. Too soon.
I love that Rebecca wrote in from Northern Ireland. I don't have a lot of Northern Ireland examples. I do have Ireland. Man, Americans love to F up an Irish accent. Tom Cruise in Far and Away. I was like, oh, what are you doing, mate? Like,
they're always after his lucky charms.
You they're know? Totally. Brad Pitt in Snatch did something that's like, it was supposed to be
is
a
that
travel
even an accent.
And he did an Irish traveler. So it had like its own sort of thing, which I was like, oh, is that your just like catch all permissiveness? But my favorite bad Irish accent is funny to me because it's from a Scottish actor. It's Gerard Butler in P.S. I Love You, which is not a great motion picture. But I think that they were just like, oh, yeah. What's up? That's like the same thing, right? Like, he can do that. He's got it. He did not have it, friends. He did not.
I think, you know, we cannot have a conversation about accents without acknowledging the granddaddy of all terrible accents. And that is Dick Van Dyke in Mary Poppins.
Yes. Yes. Except for I love the random terrible Cockney that he's doing. It was like taught to him by one of the brooms that he's pushing around. And it's Dick Van Dyke, so I'll count it.
Like, that movie's a classic. It's beloved. But you just listen to me like, what are you even doing?
Okay,
you
know? Well,
and I love the fact that when he did Chitty Chitty Bang Bang a few years later, he's like, nope, not just I'm going to be me. And that's we're not going to mess with this.
I'm from Southern California.
Yeah.
Speaking of Cockney, I would like I'll take your Dick Van Dyke and I'll raise you a Don Cheadle in the Ocean's movies because it is amazing what he's doing. I love Don Cheadle. He can do no wrong. So, of course, his performance in those I still consider perfect.
But isn't eventually that revealed to be like a put on? Like, doesn't he copped in one of the movies to the fact that he's actually not British? He's just doing the accent, or am I remembering this wrong?
Oh, my God. I think you dreamt that. I like maybe the movie that I just dreamt. Mind
was I when I saw it in a whale, I thought that's what they said.
Yes. Also, Kevin Costner in Robin Hood.
Well, yeah, I was going to say that's the opposite very, end of the like, spectrum, which is not even bothering.
Yeah. Can I tell you my favorite accent, though? Like, it's I don't even know if it counts as a bad accent, as more in just like, where is this? Are you human?
Is and it that Keanu is, Reeves in Bram Stoker's Dracula?
Oh, I love him so much. No, it's not. Oh, and it's also not Keanu Reeves in Much Ado About Nothing. Because he's my betrothed and I will not speak ill of him. You guys, whatever Benicio del Toro is doing in The Usual Suspects is okay. The best accent ever. I'll flip you. I'll flip you for real. Like, I don't know if it's a good accent.
Oh, man.
I don't know what planet it's from.
That's the thing. I don't think he is doing a recognizable accent. I don't know that Brad Pitt's doing one in Snatch. I feel like they're playing like just full on aliens who are like making words in their with their mouths for the first time.
But Brad Pitt is trying to sound Irish.
I guess. I mean, Brad Pitt in The Devil's Own is wretched. Like, I just remember seeing the trailer for
that
movie.
Oh, yeah, that's also
Irish. Where
yeah.
They have like actual Irish actress.
That's
you know,
Northern Ireland. Yeah, yeah.
Saying to him like, you know, are you from Dublin? And my accents are terrible too. And all he says is I was already like, okay, this movie's gonna suck. Like, there's no way. Brad Pitt is selling this.
Thank you to everyone who has submitted a question. If you'd like to leave a voicemail on our hotline, please call 979-803-1664, or you can email us at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org. Now it's time for our staff picks. It could be any movie at all. Alonzo, why don't you start?
So, yeah, this is a doc that I got to look at last year for Outfest, and it is now streaming on Discovery Plus. And before Pride Month is over, I wanted to recommend that people check out a doc called P.S. please burn this letter. And Drea is coming out of her skin, so I'm glad to know that she likes it too. And it is basically they found these letters that had been from that gay men had written to each other from decades ago when, you know, it was very, you could get arrested for being in the wrong bar or for, you know, being served alcohol or being caught in drag or whatever. And they find, you know, people who are still alive, who were part of this chain of correspondence, a lot of amazing archival footage of drag clubs and just sort of like sort of underground speakeasies, you know, mob run bars where gay men went, you know, bars like the Stonewall, but, you know, even but in the 50s, even before that. You know, it's a great companion piece with the Pride series on FX, which I've talked about. But yeah, it's just a really great. It's a movie that does a really great job of making history feel very vivid and very, you know, like we're still in it and we're still part of it, and that it's so much of a direct thread to things. So, you know, if you watch RuPaul's Drag Race, if you are somebody who is, you know, reveling in the modern state of queer culture, you know, it is incumbent upon you to know where we came from and why it hasn't always been like this and the hurdles that had to be overcome to get to where we are now. And this movie does a really great job of that. So it's called P.S. Please Burn This Letter, and you can watch it on Discovery Plus.
It's actually called P.S. Burn This Letter, Please.
P.S. Burn This Letter, Please. That I never get this title.
No, it's okay. I'm so excited you did this. I had it in my calendar to have this be my staff pick next week because it's currently on Discovery Plus, as Alonzo says. It will be available on like iTunes and Amazon and all that stuff next week. And he is so right in everything he says. It's fantastic. It's just a great view. It has humor to it. It has pathos. Like, it's not just, trudge through the dour history of our time. Like,
it is fun and fabulous.
You nailed it. Yeah. So I, inspired by today's film, I wanted to recommend another animated feature. This is actually a Chinese animated film called Have a Nice Day. It's from 2017 or 2018. It played the Berlin Film Festival. It's also, it's a crime caper, but it has a lot more sort of comedic touches to it as well. I'd call it a neo-noir. It's structured around, you know, this driver who is working for a gang and he steals a bag of money from his bosses. And then the whole thing is like people following to try and like get the money back. And, you know, just sort of, it's got a lot of noir shape to it, to the story itself, but there's really dark humor. The animation style is like almost intentionally raw and crude. Like it's not one of those, oh, it's so beautiful, I could take any frame and put it on the wall. But it makes it feel more urgent as a result. Yeah, I think it's a really cool film and has a really great directorial style. So if you're into noir or you're into animation, Have a Nice Day from China.
And it's streaming on Canopy.
It's streaming on Canopy and available for rent. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. Canopy. Shout out to Canopy. Yeah. Canopy, all you need is your library card.
Mm-hmm. A library near you that supports Canopy.
I was going to say. Yeah. Offer not available in New York City and Atlanta, apparently.
Yeah. Damn. And ain't those the ones always saying, oh, it's better than L.A.? Damn, you can't even get Canopy. Feel bad. Okay, and it's now time for mine. I'm gonna keep the same animation tip going, and I'm gonna suggest Summer Wars, which is fun. Yeah, that was probably one of the like earliest in my adult weebiness kind of like anime movies I watched, where like I was like, oh, these are cool. You can just like watch a standalone dope thing and not have to be invested in like 26 or in the case of One Piece 978 episodes. Good Let's Lord. Go. So, and that's typically what I do for people who like want to get into anime who have lives. I'm like, here's these movies you can check out. I've been recommending Tokyo Godfathers too, thanks to Alonzo. That was iffy alley-oop into my brain. But yeah, that's my pick. I hope you enjoyed it. It's a good one. I don't even want to tell you anything. I want you to watch it like I did. Blind.
Summer Wars is great to enter completely blank and not knowing. And frankly, it's kind of It's next to impossible to describe anyway, so just watch it.
You want to enter it the same way you enter a whale. Not knowing what's coming.
There you go.
Yeah.
Not even knowing that you were in a whale for a bit because you didn't even really see it. It was dark during that scene, and you're like, oh, are they dead? And you're like, oh. No, they're doing the Pinocchio thing. They're doing the Noah. No, that's not Noah.
Pinocchio. You were right.
Yeah, it was Pinocchio.
Yeah.
But I was thinking of Jonah.
Jonah. Yes.
Jonah.
What's the famous line from Field of Dreams? Is this heaven? No, it's a whale.
All right. Now it's time for our five-star reviews. If you leave us a five-star review, we'll read it on the air, like this one from B-Dog Banjo. I already loved you guys, and I'm so happy to hear the Cruella love. I'm not a Disney guy at all, but this film was spectacular. Sat through it with a big smile on my face. Great guests, too. You're my favorite film podcast. Thanks.
No, thank you, B-Dog you. Banjo.
Yay! Yeah.
Strong.
Yay for the Cruella love.
I know. Ooh. I love that Cruella was the one that you're like, I gotta leave a review after this one. I gotta leave a review.
I do that.
At first it was Judy, but then Cruella came in, and now I have to really leave it. Alonzo and Dre, thank you for another great episode. As always, fun to be on this ship with you.
Thank you, sir.
Through the galaxy. And if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at @maximum_film. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/maximumfilm, or send us an email at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien, who is great and awesome and someone I personally look up to as a hero. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, who is even greater, some would say. This is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.